Bill Cundiff.
And Sue's still pointing at us. Oh, here we go.
There you go.
Now it sounds like we're talking. Before, it just sounded like we were talking to ourselves, because we were. Okay, so, redo. Good afternoon. Welcome to We the People Radio. We're having another episode, as they say. My name is Erin Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff, again.
Although I heard you the first time.
Yeah, but I heard myself.
But I was alone.
Well. Yeah.
It's the only one.
Our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard up in Shasta Lake City. Just you can see them there from the freeway. Lots of John Deere products in stock, from mowers to compact tractors. They're also a Honda dealer. They've got Honda products, generators, mowers. They've got it all in stock. Go up and see them. Their phone number is 226-9226, or you can get them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Or you can find them on our homepage at wethepeopleradio.us.
.us, that's
right. Because I finally got that all situated.
We got that link up, so yeah, you can go there and just hook up and see.
All ready to roll.
They got it all. So there we are.
All right. So today we're, I'm kind of loud.
Well, I've grown used to it.
It's, you know, it's a family problem.
Yeah.
Bill was spared the giant family loudness this year, however. So,
you know, that's the Thanksgiving dinner where everybody talks at the same time.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're not together that often.
And you could actually sit there and talk to yourself and nobody would even
notice. we would butt in.
Nobody, no. You would butt in on yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we hope you all had a really nice Thanksgiving. We're airing this show the first time on December 1st of 2019, because sometimes we replay them, so I'll give you a little context. We were actually joshing about Thanksgiving, so we hope you had a great time with your family. We are going to move from Thanksgiving, all the happiness and togetherness there is. We are going to move right into the inside issues about Hong Kong and what's going on with China. We hear a lot about it in the news, but we only hear about it for like a minute and a half at a time. We don't seem to learn a lot.
Nope, you'll hear the full story today.
Yeah, so today we thought we would have our guest, Dr. Chen, back on with his friend, Eureka Young. And so let's see, we have had Dr. Chen on several times before. You can find his information on our website at wethepeopleradio.us. Got all of it there. He's been active in projects concerning China for over 30 years. He's founded, co-founded, or been a spokesperson for a number of organizations concerning China and has spoken extensively on issues related to China. We have a ton more information. I'm going to skip to the end, though, of his bio, because I hope you'll go back and listen to some of the programs he did where he told us some background about himself. He was born in China in 1962, so he's a year younger than I am. Isn't it great? Isn't it great to be 57, 58?
I wouldn't know.
Although lately it feels more like, you know, we're all senior citizens because the world's gone mad. But at 15, he entered the gifted program at China University of Science and Technology. He came to the U.S. in 1982 to study and received his Ph.D. in molecular biology at the University of California, San Diego. He currently owns and runs a molecular biology startup in San Diego. And his friend, Eureka Young, came from China to the United States as a college student in 1988. After graduate school, he worked first as an engineer and later as an independent consultant providing real-time financial information, retrieval and processing solutions to financial service firms and government agencies. His clients include Dow Jones and Company, Adobe, Oracle, Banco de Mexico, and Booz Allen Hamilton. Sorry, I got those out of order there. Mr. Young's professional work requires him to stay on top of global, macroeconomic, and geopolitical trends. Starting from 2012, he's been providing analysis and information free of charge to not-for-profit organizations, particularly those with interest in U.S.-China relations. So, gotta say, we've got some experts. And we'll kind of let them take it away. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Good afternoon. Thanks for coming on.
Good afternoon.
You'll have to
have a very good Thanksgiving.
Absolutely. You'll have to introduce yourselves so people know which voice goes with which person, since we're all talking on the phone here, so we can't see you.
Yeah, this is Shizhong Chen. I've been on this program a number of times. So I'll let my friend Eureka speak.
This is Eureka Yan, and it's first time I'm on your radio program, and I'm glad to be here.
Well, we're glad
thanks
to have
a lot.
You. Absolutely.
We can actually hear you better than Dr. Chen. Maybe Dr. Chen, you could get a little bit closer to your microphone a teeny bit.
Yeah. Is it better now?
Oh, hey, there you go.
Okay. Sorry about that.
No, that's all right. It's just sometimes when we have two people, you know, one is loud, one is soft, and so you know how that goes. Okay, so now we've bridged the technological gap there.
The fine-tuning.
We've jumped the shark, as they say. So, where would you guys like to start?
Well, let me first say this. I've been onto this program, partly because the information we covered was vast, so... the previous stories wasn't quite as complete as I wished to deliver them. But today, hopefully, we will deliver a complete but complex story, see if we can accomplish this, because there are several events happened, you know, in the past couple months, and that they really tie into a very intriguing story that involves Hong Kong and Taiwan and the CCP's overall strategy, its war against the whole world, and then how the free world, particularly the United States, would be best in helping helping Chinese people, at the same time helping itself to end this horrendous war. And so hopefully we will deliver this story in a tight little package. And so I think as you know, our program called for, we should start out with discussing the Hong Kong story. Eureka will have much more detail because he's on top of these things. But the Hong Kong story only come to be known to the public beyond June. In fact, probably after August, when it has escalated to a very large scale. But it really started with a Hong Kong-Taiwan situation. And it has become what it is now, with a lot of, you know, we can only guess, with a lot of manipulation, with CCP's aiming at Taiwan. And that's why you hear a number of congressmen or Senate in their recent debate and discussion on the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act to say that Hong Kong, if we don't do Hong Kong, if we don't win Hong Kong, Taiwan will be the next victim. So they know something that but the general public do not know yet, okay, because this has not been well covered. But basically, let me be briefly, that this Hong Kong movement started out as a movement against anti-tradition law, specifically to prevent the CCP willfully taking any Hong Kong citizen to mainland China, right? And the cause of this was there was a Hong Kong murderer who killed his girlfriend in Taiwan and then escaped or ran to Hong Kong. He's a Hong Kong resident. And there's no extradition, you know, treaty between or arrangement between Hong Kong and Taiwan. When Taiwan requested Hong Kong for assistance to solve this homicide case.
Hold that thought, Dr. Chen. We have to take a really quick break. We'll be right back with you.
Sure.
You're listening to We the People. Please join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
What do they want? What should we do about them? What do they want? What should we do about them? What do they want?
I see spin across the ocean. Too much money.
And we're back. Okay, sorry for that unceremonious pause there. You can restart right where you are.
Sure. We're talking about this murderer from Hong Kong killed his girlfriend, who was also from Hong Kong, to travel to Taiwan. And after the murder, escaped back to Hong Kong. And Taiwan tried three times to request for assistance. The Hong Kong side didn't respond. And now, this we can only do analysis, right? But somehow, somewhere, the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, must have found its value. And then it started to push this anti-tradition law. That would include, that the law would cover Hong Kong as well as Taiwan. So right away, this become a political issue that has implication in Taiwan. That's the larger picture, right? And this picture has largely been missed, right? Now, does the CCP need this anti-traditional law? Well, in reality, in practice, it really didn't. That's why I say, you know, this, the Taiwan implication could be very important. Because before this extradition law controversy or confrontation or war right now, the CCP has been going to Hong Kong to arrest Hong Kong residents before. It has happened, right? And so this law would only make that more convenient. That's it. I mean, they don't need it. They have been doing it. Right? And so later on, we'll bring in another story, and that's why this could be a complete. This will make it complete. It's a recent defection of Chinese agent to Australia. He personally involved in one of the many, kidnapping of Hong Kong residents to mainland China. So the CCP didn't really need it. And yet, with this murder case happening in Taiwan, it started to push for that. And Hong Kong resident, of course, was already sensitive to the things that the CCP was in Hong Kong. This has a range of background, starting in 2013, and then 2017, and then now 2019. Each case there were particular law, a particular legal issue. And now, finally, in June, it broke out into the current anti-tradition movement, anti-traditional law movement. And I will ask Eureka to fill in some of the key events that has led to a lot of tragedies that leads where things are now. Eureka, you want to take over?
Yeah. for the extradition bill proposed, which proposed by the special administration in Hong Kong, the government of Hong Kong, it was like being discussed early this year, like March or so, and people in Hong Kong, they very much understand that China, mainland China, has a weak rule of law, and this lack of the rule of law is one of the main causes of trade friction between the United States and China. And while Hong Kong itself is rated very high in terms of economic freedom, and so despite the economic growth in the past few decades within China, businesses like U.S. business in China, they experienced the first hand violations of economic freedom within China. And not only that, U.S. businessmen and the business people from Europe and from Hong Kong as well, or Taiwan, they understand that violations of economic freedom in mainland China spill over into violations of political freedom, into the space of human rights and freedom of speech, freedom of assembly. So they consider this extradition bill a huge threat. They could be arrested and framed arbitrarily. And one recent event was a staff member of UK's Consulate General was tortured and harassed when he was visiting across the border and visited China. Given his status working in UK's Consulate General in Hong Kong, he was treated with this kind of diplomatic status. Even a person with that identity would be severely abused. Then people in Hong Kong, it wouldn't surprise people in Hong Kong that if an average citizen in Hong Kong gets taken over into mainland, then what treatment they can expect. So that was how the demonstrations started this year.
Now, not to get off the point too quickly, what is their status as far as freedom of speech in Hong Kong? I mean, do they really have open freedom of speech there, or are they pretty locked down by the CCP?
Yeah, and the situations, I believe, have been deteriorating. And the defector who recently was interviewed by media in Australia that we're going to get to, he claimed that he was involved in kidnapping of publishers, which relates to freedom of speech,
mm-hmm.
In Hong Kong. He was involved in the kidnap of the book publisher into mainland China. And then there's also subjects that you cannot discuss among Chinese media, especially not only in Hong Kong, but the worldwide media just don't touch upon those topics. Examples would include events in Xinjiang, Xinjiang, and I'm glad to see that New York Times started publishing over 20 documents, over 400 pages documents leaked out from there. So there, and then there's also organizing Dr. Chen was involved, the Conscience Foundation, that he has been advocating a spiritual group, Falun Gong, followers in China who have experienced also severe abuse. So in Hong Kong, topics like these are not widely publicized or discussed. But on the other hand, There are media. I believe there are a few media out in the Congo. They are rather outspoken, and in the past few months, they are on the streets recording the demonstration firsthand. So there is this tug of war in Hong Kong. Right? Yeah, there's no like a single statement that I or a single word that I could describe. How the situation is. It's fairly complex, but it is getting worse.
So can I chime in? Just remember we will come back to the Hong Kong
topic. Please do, because I've only got like 2 minutes, and I know you better, so I feel better about cutting you off.
Okay, no problem. Bill asked an excellent question. It actually, to answer the question, we have an answer in terms of principle, but also an answer in terms of practicality or reality. If we turn this question on United States, on America, we cannot ask us, do Americans have freedom of speech? In principle, we do.
Depends on where you are. I guess if you're at Berkeley, no.
Well, in principle, we still do, right?
Right.
In there, even there. But in reality, do we have them? Well, it's a practical matter, right? When all the news media, or most of them, were controlled by certain group with their own agenda, and as I have always spoken on this, loudly spoken, that news media is not a business, right? Cannot be treated as just business. It carries public interest. And when our channel, it's not our right, but our channel of freedom of speech is blocked or controlled, then in practice, our right could be there, but you cannot practice it. You don't have it in reality. And that is happening in Hong Kong, but also happening in the United States. If American knows how many media was bought and controlled by the CCP, we will know how and why our freedom of speech is also under attack in big ways.
Right. Hey, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, can you talk a little bit about how things have changed as far as freedom of speech since the CCP took over Hong Kong, which I think was, 1999? What's the difference between now and then? And we'll be right back.
Look at you, Bill.
If everybody's wrong, young people speak in their minds, are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
And we're back. And we're talking about freedom of speech in Hong Kong, and I'm just curious how much it's changed since China took over Hong Kong, and what's the difference between then and now? And I know it's getting worse, but is that something that's just recently been changing, or have they slowly been chipping away at it?
They have been slowly chipping it away, and in recent years, the situation got worse, much worse in like the past 5 or so years. Prior to the handover of Hong Kong to mainland China in 1997, Hong Kong boasted as one of the with highest degree of press freedom around the world. And after the handover, due to economic, as China's economy grows, and it started to influence Hong Kong media in multiple ways. And for example, they financed television stations, a prominent prominent one named Phoenix. Is known as, I think it's Phoenix TV. And also, not only that, and they can also influence television stations and the print media by, like, allowing, like, by blocking or directing advertisements to these media. And also during, also they, Beijing, I believe, is very capable at influencing editorial board and the selection of chief editors. One example is with the South China Morning Post. This is a like a very well-known media. It has a long history, and it is like a well-established English media in Hong Kong. And there, around 1997, I think, people working at the China Desk in South China Morning Post, they write the reports, and those more outspoken reporters, they they're like their reports came under kind of a sort of a censorship, and their editor in chief was like even their editor in chief I think was under pressure of Beijing, and they will decide whether like a report could be published in full or they want to like cut out sensitive sections of the report.
Mm-hmm.
So that was during the transfer, like in around 1997, and there was one reporter. His name Paul Mooney, and I think he was due to his unbiased report, he wasn't able to renew his contract with the paper, and this took place around 2012. And after 2012, not Hong Kong's situation got worse because it is close to China, and in China, the freedom of speech is really like under threat. Although it is an authoritarian government, there was still some leeway that people could discuss issues so as to like advance economic growth, so as to like promote social justice, so that to alleviate the disparity between different social groups, which would actually would help the governance of the country. But even these discussions are coming under very close scrutiny.
Now that they have the ability to monitor people so closely with all of the cameras and those sorts of things,
all the
facial recognition and all that, I would imagine that has enabled them to crack down in a way that they never could have before.
Yes, and these surveillance cameras and also reporters from mainland China and the people with connections with these police and other like law enforcement groups in China, they came into Hong Kong to take pictures, and that's why protesters, they wear masks, right? And then
sure.
The administration region in Hong Kong, they passed a law that they just directed like the legislature to pass a law to prohibit protesters from wearing masks, not just the protesters, just everyday people when you're on the street. Yeah, they wouldn't allow them to wear masks. Yes.
And is that new?
Let me just mention one trick that honest people probably didn't even think of how to curtail control your freedom of expression. That is to threaten those commerce to do advertisement in media that the CCP didn't like. that would effectively cut off their
funding,
economic means.
Sure.
And this is exactly what happened in the United States to Epoch Times. It's still going on now. The CCP would threaten those shops who, those business that did do advertisement with Epoch Times. They'll go to them and then see, if you do this, something would happen to you. And, well,
they firebombed their offices, four times?
Mm-hmm. And actually, as part of this Hong Kong confrontation last week, there's some unknown people, we can guess who they are, but they break into, actually, more than break, they just basically forced their way into Epoch Times printing shop in Hong Kong and burned it.
I think that's the video I just saw just a few days ago. Was it this the one they caught on surveillance? And I guess we should make a note for the people who are looking for real news and full stories rather than, the sanitized stories or actually things that don't cover anything sensible at all. The Epoch Times, Epoch Times, it's like $39 a month. They send out a hard copy paper once a week. They send out digital all the time. Actually, you're always available on digital, but it's really worth a subscription, and I believe the first month is like a dollar. And it would be worth checking out if you find that, some people still like the newspaper, so they still get their local paper, even though there's not a lot going on in there.
A lot of the older people don't do internet. And what are they doing on internet? Are they pretty successful at cracking that that code and blocking a lot of sites on the internet in Hong Kong?
Erica?
Maybe you should pick this over, see if you could.
I was asking if the internet is censored and if certain sites aren't available in Hong Kong as far as the internet service.
For the internet censorship, I think it is the situation is not as bad as in mainland China. But in the recent weeks, in the past few weeks, the developments in Hong Kong, the police forces were besieging Hong Kong Chinese University. And one of the reasons, according to news reports, was that there was a hub, like an internet hub, where the messages were exchanged and they were dispatched. It is one of the hub where information flows into and out of Hong Kong. And the police aimed at cutting off that main channel of information flow. And so now information flow in Hong Kong and the internet access is under severe pressure. I do not have the latest status on whether people are still experiencing any difficulty in getting message out. But so far, it seems the protesters, they're still in touch with each other.
Right. I was also curious if that use of the internet, because they can track who's who and your IP address and so forth. And I would imagine that is a bit of a challenge for them as far as being identified on the internet. Are they using the dark web, or are they just openly using the internet to communicate?
Well, the CCP, that's why the CCP is the single biggest incentive or promoter for the VPN services. That service has helped people to hide their identity. So of course the CCP is trying to crack down on that. There are already laws in China prohibiting the VPN, but I'm pretty certain that the United States is researching on how to completely break the CCP's control of internet, the Great Firewall.
Sure.
And of course, if this internet connection can come from the sky, that would be a great deal.
Yeah, no kidding.
And they've got, you know, the CCP now has Google helping them out there too, which is real nice.
Yeah, really lovely.
So.
I've got to take a really quick break here. We'll be right back with our guests, Dr. Chen and Eureka Young. Wasn't going to let the Beatles overtake us for a second time. Sorry about the fumble on the play.
Yeah, fumble on the play.
These things happen. All right, so we've got 10-ish minutes until the top of the hour, and thank you for being our hostages the second hour, because obviously this topic is far from over.
Can I make a suggestion?
Yes, have a field day.
Yeah, so... I was optimistic that we can tell the whole story now. We're under the threat of time, so I want to move things, accelerate things a little bit to bring the Hong Kong to summarize the Hong Kong situation a little bit. Till right before the passage of the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act in U.S. House and Senate. So from June to November, there was this, Eureka put it nicely, as a controlled raid massacre. Well, I shouldn't say nicely, but succinctly, the situation has escalated in Hong Kong, and yet in news media, well, the CCP make it as a the rioters are the ones that caused the problem, and fortunately, many media in the international society still cover it more or less accurately, but not comprehensively. And what is going on, this is a controlled raid massacre. What I define it as a kill as needed. To kill to serve its purpose, but only kill as it served the CCP's purpose in the best way. And their attack of a siege of university changed that, alert the international community quite a lot. So that process, I would like to have Erica to fill in some of the key themes or details. Erica wants to speak about it?
You're right. I didn't get the exact word, the content to fill in the area that you'd like me to fill in.
What you call the controlled rate massacre. Controlled massacre or controlled rate massacre. You have put it that way.
I have to gauge the governance, effective governance of an area, by looking over Communist Party's long history over 20th century and now into 21st century. They usually take like this approach. The first they will through propaganda, right? And education, they will let young people to grow to become what the term is patriotism, patriotic education. But then nowadays it's mainly nationalistic education. And the first is education and propaganda. The next step, if people do not buy into that, then the next stage, it goes to economic incentive, right, to pay for service, in exchange for your paying tribute to the current leadership or the current set of policies. They give intellectuals prominent status and also good economic status and social status. So that's for free education, education which doesn't cost as much becomes ineffective, then it rolls out economic incentives. Then if this does not work and people do not want go beyond the limits and they do not want to sometimes they do not want to be associated with people they even among intellectuals they think those they do not like to really say things to really praise the leaders that they do not like, right? Then because there was this phase of a cultural revolution where intellectuals were undergoing severe tribulations, and they did not want to say good words about practices deployed during cultural revolution, so they refused to pay tribute to leaders who are advancing that. A former party boss in Chongqing, Bo Xilai, who was toppled in 2012, he was known to promote this type of policy. So then, by the time people are not willing, even if you are trying to pay for their service, then the policy would be rolled out they're going to threat you, right? They're going to implicate your non-compliance would impact your family members' promotion, so that's the third stage. And if that does not work, then there would be economic depravity, and there would be imprisonment, and then there would be harassment. This would be the next phase. And in Hong Kong, in the past few months, there are reports saying there was this young girl who was good at swimming, and she was the last video surveillance camera caught her being taken off campus. Then a few days later, she was washed ashore and died. She was very good. She was a swimmer, but then she was
accidental death again.
Yeah. And then there were also reports people falling off from high rise. But when their body hit the ground, there was no pool of blood. So basically, they were dead before they were pushed off the building. And now we're in this phase that like education wouldn't work, and the economic incentive wouldn't work, and the threat wouldn't work. Now, like, we're start seeing these called like suicidal death cases. So this is really disturbing, and this is something that we really need to speak out. And it's because the task force now appears to be running the show, and so it is very hard to thoroughly investigate these cases. And it is one of the five demands of Hong Kong protesters, that is, they want to form an independent committee to look into overuse of force and to look into police.
I'm sure that's a pretty much a bottom of their list of things to do.
Yeah. So that's how the reason that are very disturbing.
Do you think the protesters in Hong Kong have a little more leeway than if, say, you wanted to do the same kind of protesting in mainland China?
Of course, because of the international attention. And what do we say in this radio? Although, like, we thought people in Hong Kong probably wouldn't have heard it. But because of the attention of international community, and also the support of the public in the United States, reflected in the overwhelming the votes for the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act. That's why I believe the 1 million or so law enforcement troops haven't got into Hong Kong. Yeah, I think whatever we were discussing, whatever we say, I think our support really matters.
Sure. I think a lot of people here are pretty surprised that the military hasn't jumped in up to this point.
Well, it also seems to be malfunctioning. I mean, the more that they oppress them, the more attention they receive. It appears from here that the protests are getting larger. Let's pick that up on the other side of the hour when we come back. And we really appreciate you guys coming on with us. I really hope people will go on to the website, check out both your bios, look at the Epoch Times. We have a link to them, and consider subscribing. It would be really worthwhile. You'll learn a great deal. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Good afternoon, and welcome to We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery. Pape Machinery is our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. If you're looking for anything in the way of a tractor or mowing equipment, go see them. They're up at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. They got lots of stuff in stock. They're also a Honda dealer. They have lots of generators on hand if the power goes out. We're having some pretty nice weather here lately, so if the power does go out, go up and see them. They've got lots to choose from up there. Their phone number is 226-9226, or you can get them on the web at papemachinery.com.
And if you don't want to remember all that, you can go to wethepeopleradio.us, and it's right there.
There it is. Click on their site and on their ad, and you'll go right to them.
Exactly. Okay, so I'm not going to dilly-dally here. We have Dr. Chen and his friend Eureka Young on with us. We're talking about Hong Kong and, I guess more broadly, the issues of what happens when the government rolls in and decides what you can say, what you can think, where you can go. And the Chinese Communist Party is something we'll refer to a lot in this program. And they'll always say CCP, and sometimes people are like, what the heck is CCP? Chinese Communist Party is the reference there. So, guys, where would you like to go this hour?
So, I would like to first summarize the Hong Kong situation, and then introduce a very relevant, surprising incident that happened last week that will help us to look beyond or from Hong Kong incident and beyond what it is and see the world stage. So the many people worried Hong Kong will develop into a June 4th massacre. It already is. But the reason that we don't feel it is exactly because what Eureka has called it a controlled rate massacre. If we look at this siege of two universities in Hong Kong, the Chinese University in Hong Kong, the Pop University in Hong Kong, and the Polytechnic University, the two universities in Hong Kong. Not even in 1989 June 4th massacre in mainland China that the Chinese army has attacked or siege any university in mainland China. So in comparison, the CCP has gotten much bolder than in Beijing 30 years ago. What prevented the outright massacre is Hong Kong, Hong Kong's economic position. Now, in terms of number of arrests and people killed, it's already close to in 1989, right? Available information says 6,000 Hong Kong resident has been arrested, and the British consulate staff who was arrested in China, as Erica has mentioned in top of the first half program, he witnessed large number of Hong Kong protesters being detained in Hong Kong, in Shenzhen. This proves, as I said, you know, that the CCP didn't need an extradition law. They're doing it already. With or without this law, 6,000 has been sent to mainland China where there's no law. I mean, they were. We have no idea how much they have suffered. Many of these people who have been reported being suicide, you know, what we Chinese call being suicide, probably are victims of the torture and killing, right? But the CCP is doing it in such a way that it controls the severity of it. So to the people that the threat is real, but to Western media, to the outside world, it's not as bad as June 4th massacre. And this is the danger of the controlled rate massacre. Kill as they need it. And this is very similar to another approach of the CCP, the organ harvest against Falun Gong practitioners. You know, Falun Gong practitioners were detained, they were killed as the organ is needed. But let me introduce another topic. This is closely related to this this Hong Kong confrontation. Is the last week there is a Chinese agency called Wang Liqiang or William Wang, who defected to Australia government in April, but only came out publicly to disclose the things he was involved in conducting the CCP's business in Hong Kong as well as in Taiwan and in Australia. the information he disclosed proved to a large extent of what we have talked about, the larger plan, the larger plot by the CCP. So Eureka has more information on this William Wang and how its impact and some of the interesting story. So Eureka, you want to speak about it?
Yeah, about William Wang Li Chang. This is a pseudonym used in intelligence circle, as like a lot of Chinese agents, they have their pseudonyms. One well-known example is the son of Marshal Ye Jianying. Marshal Ye was involved in negotiation of during the Marshall Mission, right? It was prior to 1949, communist takeover of mainland. He was involved in negotiating with the U.S. delegates, the delegation, as well as the nationalists. And his son was in military intelligence. And his son's real name was Ye Xuan Ning, but he used a pseudonym, Yue Feng. And they use many pseudonyms in different occasions. Then they have a kind of a well-known one, like established pseudonym. So this Wang Li Chang is claimed that he is using this name as a pseudonym as well. And interestingly enough, that he reported to someone who is based in Hong Kong. And another you may say it is coincidental, is a well-known CFO of Huawei, a telecommunications company. And their CFO was based in Hong Kong as well, who was arrested when transiting in Canada to Argentina like about a year ago. I believe it was exactly, today is the anniversary of Meng Wanzhou, Sabrina Meng's arrest last year when she was like traveling from China to Argentina. And she is based in Hong Kong. A lot of agencies were well connected with Chinese with military background. They set up the front shops in Hong Kong. So this Wang Li Chang came up with a story on how he was associated with his boss, whose name is Xiang Xin. It could very well be another pseudonym. And he was teaching his boss's wife how to paint painting, like oil painting, as far as I remember. Then he was very close to the couple. And so this time he came out and met media in Australia, and the couple who Mr. Wang claimed were his boss and the boss's wife, they were visiting Taiwan, and the couple were engaged in infiltrating Taiwan and influencing Taiwan's upcoming election.
And the couple denied that
they even know Mr. Wang. But then a picture came out. Taiwan authorities presented a picture with the three of them, like in the same setting. So this is more or less the background of this
defector. Wow. Hold that thought. We're going to come right back. We've got to take a quick break. You are listening to We the People. You can find all the information about today's show and our guests at wethepeopleradio.us.
But I don't want some pretty face to tell me pretty lies. All I want is someone.
I sing this song to Bill all the time.
It doesn't do any good.
But I can't read his mind, just for the record. Okay, go back to let's go back to Australia and the quote unquote spy. Or not.
Erica, you're there?
Oh yeah, I'm here. Basically that was the how this this Mr. Wang that came came to the public to tell his story. And it also gave us a glimpse of how the impact of the National Intelligence Act of 2017 that was like put into effect by the National Congress in Beijing. And according to Article 7 of that National Intelligence Act, all the Chinese nationals, like whether they're within China or they're overseas, they are supposed to support intelligence gathering. And this has made the it's really kind of now the government in Beijing is operating in this new territory of all its nationals are like obligated to provide intelligence. And the Chinese officials, of course, they deny that they have to do these they deny that, but the denial was never like outright saying like Chinese citizens are under no obligation. Like it was never clear cut. And there are ways that like they were influenced. It's also even in Australia, reports came out like in recent years that students studying, Chinese students studying in Australia, they are organized through this student association. And the leaders of these Chinese student associations, they report to consulate, embassy and the consulate officials. So it is through this hierarchy of management, Chinese students are organized. And if they this also comes back to like our freedom of speech, right? If a student makes a comment on Hong Kong unfavorably toward Beijing or the special administration regions like a government in their handling, in the overuse of a police force or that, then this whole through this hierarchy, the student's words and his comments will be documented and it will be on file. So this surveillance has come out, actually, has expanded, not just for people within China, even for people, Chinese people, or like overseas, now they have this kind of threat. And Australia is one place, and the United States, we have these similar student associations. We have Confucius Institutes, right? Confucius Institute. And in Canada, there was this organized parade that people like driving like sports cars, fancy cars, and with Chinese flags and all that, and try to harass like Hong Kong students and all that. So it is through this hierarchy, strictly like managed hierarchy, and with many of these people running the network actually serving the Chinese intelligence community. So that's how its overseas operations are being carried out. So I think, Sudo, maybe you can take over from here. I would just give you some background information.
Yeah, so among other things William Wang has done was to influence the 2018 election. It was a very large election, national election below the federal level. All the counties, cities, and the CCP won, or the side that's support or you know, affiliate with the CCP won a big way. And he disclosed how that was manipulated from the CCP side. He also substantiated the CCP's underground manipulation in Hong Kong, including arresting people, book publishers. He was personally involved in one of them. And then also he disclosed the agent network in Australia. So many people, you know, many common you know, taters was very surprised by the amount of information this disclosed, which is surprising, but even more surprising to me, right, is how this is a very young person. He's 27 years old. And many people claim that he's a small-time operator, being so young. From his education, he was not a traditional or typical. He didn't really have the professional spy training. There's one thing I need to add, that as soon as he spoke to the public, the CCP side came out with several court documents showing that he was a criminal in China, basically trying to discredit him. Well, unfortunately, his name, Wally Chan, is a pseudonym. That's not his real name. So this calls into question how the Chinese court document was...
yeah, how'd they get a court document with the guy's fake name on it? Oops.
But anyway, so what I think what caught my eye is something not about how small time he is. It particularly if it's a small time operator, then we need to look at why he has this large impact. And then more than that, how many of these small time operators are there?
Yeah.
So this brings out a very serious topic, that is how the CCP has weaponized the whole Chinese population to be its soldier, pawn, or agent in carrying out its agenda against the whole world. In previous program, we talked about the Thousand Talent Program and how the Chinese has used Chinese business to infiltrate this country, right? And so there's this theme that now with Wang Yichang's defection, hopefully the world will start to see. And I just want to quickly summarize a very, very rough summary of how the Chinese Communist Party has weaponized the Chinese people. Erica already mentioned some of it, a little bit of it. Violence and coercion to subdue people's conscience so they would act against their conscience is one way. And then I often characterize the CCP's ruling as rule by deception. Its propaganda and mobilization machine is one that the world has yet to recognize.
And that machine has come to this country. It has brought a lot of media here.
I was going to say, how much of it do you... I would be really interested to know. We've take a quick break again. When we come back, I'd like to know what, as you guys are watching what's happening in the United States, how reminiscent is it of what's happening in China? And I would imagine it's fairly scary, because the more we learn from you, the more we look at our own media differently. We'll be right back with our guests, Dr. Chen and also Eureka Young. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. More surveillance songs from the olden days. I guess we were being warmed up for the whole idea. So how much of what's going on in the U.S. is like the baby steps toward what we're seeing in Hong Kong and also in China?
Much more than you are willing to, you want to know.
I'm going to say that.
The media purchase and control the covert operation. We unfortunately those information are not completely known. I hope the United States is paying attention to that. Well, I know they're paying attention now, but when they start to pay attention to, I don't know. And when will those information be known to us? I don't know. But only from scattered information, we can already know that it's very, very severe. The stealing, the controlling, the propaganda. Okay. So let me put it this way. Okay. The CCP has already weaponized the Chinese nationals, or the original from China, maybe they're real citizens now. They weaponized its subject or its population in the large ways against other countries' interests for a long time. For its scale, for its pervasiveness, the systematic way they're doing things, such things, should be viewed, it really is, right, should be viewed as an undeclared war against the world. The CCP's undeclared war against the world. And the CCP has a term for this kind of war. The Chinese is called the Chao Xian Zhan. Well, if I translated that into English, it would be the war without bottom line. With no bottom line. Basically, anything goes. Right? So, this war the CCP has been conducting for the past 30 years, well, minimum 20 years, and we are
we are far from realizing it. This war is actually conducted by the Chinese military. Again, I will ask Eureka to fill in how this command was structured. This war command is structured. The so-called National Security Commission. Right. Eureka, you want to fill in the some of the details?
Yeah, the this Taoxian in Chinese meaning exceeding war, exceeding any limits, and a prominent China expert, Michael Pillsbury, who works in the as advisor to Secretary of Defense, he started his long career in the intelligence community. He described this as asymmetrical war. Due to the predominant military power of the United States, and back in as early as 1990s, Chinese military figured that to fight the United States, it would be hard if we send out warships, send out airplanes, and I believe Chinese military had a hard time building jet engines themselves. So they decide they need to find out an alternative to confront the United States. So they came up with this idea of asymmetrical war. And this got strengthened, this approach, in recent years. And Mike Pillsbury has been engaged with Chinese military commanders over the past few decades. And recently, he had been more outspoken. He published a well-known book, The 100-Year Marathon, that described the ultimate goal of the Chinese military. And it's his side of the story. And he was one of the early alarmists who understood the danger of this asymmetrical warfare. And in recent years, for example, in the past 5 or so years, there was this National Security Committee formed in China, which oversees a lot of sectors. Those are it oversees military under the name of national security. It oversees state security. It oversees financial security. It oversees all the possible disturbances that could come up across the country, including northwestern part of the country, Xinjiang Autonomous Region. So all these explosive issues or touch issues are under the portfolio of this National Security Committee. And it has military arm of it, it has state security arm of it, and stretching up and coming down from this hierarchy, when it extends to its overseas operations, these orders are being carried out diplomats, by leaders of the student associations, and also people like Wang Liqiang, who are sent out by these intelligence agency, and who reports that these intelligence officials ultimately they report to this National Security Commission. So that's the general outline of the hierarchy. Now back to you.
The head of that committee or commission is the CCP Secretary General Xi Jinping. And so that's where it came from. Right? It's from top to bottom. And it's, earlier I said, this is an undeclared war against the world, particularly for the leader in military technology as well as economic inventions. scientific inventions. But this is also an undeclared war against the Chinese people. So Eureka said, any people, you know, have any discontent thought would be dealt with severely by this national security force or machinery. And so this brings up a situation where a large number of Chinese citizens or nationals are both the victim as well as pawn or agent of the Chinese Communist Party. They're victims because their rights, their, you know, their life has been, you know, has suffered the oppression by this regime. But meanwhile, large number, I'm talking about millions and millions of Chinese people, wittingly or unwittingly has been acting as Chinese or the CCP agent. And they act like this for one reason or another, out of their fear, out of their, you know, economic interest, or out of their control through this propaganda, this CCP propaganda of nationalistic hatred, and many, many different manipulation, right? And they became this non-soldier army, right? And this is a new threat. This is a threat that the world has to come to realize and think about how to handle it. Because the Chinese people are not necessarily their army. Sorry, not necessarily their enemy, but they're in their on their land. We have millions of Chinese in the United States. It's so Pompeo and Secretary Pompeo and Vice President Pence both have said as recently, separate the CCP from China. Right. This is an important improvement from our, you know, past administrations, but that's not enough yet.
Just because they're recognizing it's important.
Yeah, recognizing this is important. It's very important.
Yeah, because it doesn't seem like it's been really talked about or acknowledged in the past. I think this is becoming much more a bit more of a mainstream idea. I mean, heck, we're talking about it. Let's take a really quick break here so we don't run you guys up to the top of the hour with all of our celebrations of capitalism here. So we'll take a little quick break. We'll be back with our guests. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Okay. So, in our last, you know, 10 minutes, I know we'll have you guys on again in the future because obviously, again, we didn't get to everything. But
one last question I had was recently there was an election over in Hong Kong.
Oh, yeah.
And we heard a little bit about it, but the concern was, what do you think the CCP's how are they going to react to that election?
Yeah, this is the last topic I want to bring this story into completion also. Last minute, I tried to compress everything into this last 10 minutes. That is, this election, as well as just before the election, there was this passage of the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act by the House and by the Senate. Well, I won't have time to get into how this act was actually delayed. Most likely by the interest of Wall Street. But anyway, it finally got passed and signed by President Trump. And that's just before the election. Right? I'll come back to the election. I want to say why this itself is very significant. We probably didn't realize this is the first act or bill that relate to human rights or democracy anywhere in China for the past 30 years. Right? China has been the single biggest violator of human rights. And yet, for the past 30 years, the U.S. didn't take any real meaningful act that has teeth. And this is the first one. And I don't have time to go into it, how this was delayed, how this was really coming into being because Hong Kong's economic position, or U.S. economic interests in Hong Kong. But basically, the United States actually faced two problems, realizing one but not the other. Right? So thanks to President Trump, the United States finally stood up against the CCP in the area of economics, started beating them back. But that only stopped the CCP advancement in one area, the economic exploitation. The bigger half of the problem is the CCP's undeclared war. And they're weaponizing the Chinese nationals to harm other nations. And there's really no legislative tool or other tools against that, right? Because the number is so large. And so it should be obvious the solution is to support the righteous. When the world make it clear that the world will stand for principle, those Chinese people who were forced into act against their conscience will be encouraged by the world's righteousness. And this is what happened. For the first time in 30 years, the only time and the first time, the United States passed something that's meaningful. And that gave Hong Kong people the courage, a hope, right? And interestingly, for the past month or two, the Hong Kong police has been denying Hong Kong people's application for parade or for demonstration. Mm. Yesterday in Hong Kong, we're a day behind, the Sunday in Hong Kong people once again apply for permission of demonstration, and this time in the name of celebrating the United States passage and signing of Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act and the Hong Kong police gave them the permission. And this in itself is very significant. I hope this tells our politician that not only we need to protect our own economic interest, but if we stand up and to support the Chinese people, who will they themselves do the right things, then it will help a lot of people getting away from doing the wrong things against the United States. That solved the other half of the problem. And that's the best way. And the help is out there, what the United States needs. Right? Falun Gong, for the past 20 years, has been standing up for conscience. And Falun Gong has been a single group that has been persecuted most severely. And as now, the United States has not spoken up for Falun Gong. And yet that is one group that has spoken very consistently and loudly on the rights, on the righteousness of people. And I hope that we take a lesson, we take what has been shown right away, this act, its impact, it's powerful, how powerful it is, and learn from there what's the right path for this nation to help China and then help itself.
I'm curious when how I don't know how to even ask the question. How on guard are you when you meet new people who have come here to the U.S. from China? Do you kind of assume everybody's a spy?
Well, I am not guarded, but I'm not naive. It's just that I don't really care what I just tell them the right thing. If they listen, then I believe what I gave them is truth, the facts, and help them. And I have no fear. I really have no fear of being harmed by them. I just don't. But I know the CCP, their scheme, and I've been speaking about their scheme all these years. And so, I've met a lot of Chinese people, and I have been speaking like what I have spoken here.
And so you don't have to, really in the position that you're in now, you don't have to worry that they're kind of creeping up on you and they'll hurt your relatives and that sort of thing?
Well, they're going to do what they're going to do.
Well, but then there's that. That's true.
If I fear, then my fear wouldn't help me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's
my fear would not help me.
And so, getting back to the election, do you think this new fellow that got voted in is going to get kind of the strong arm laid on him to try to get everything back in line, or do you think they'll let him speak?
It depends on the world. Depends on them. I view this as as I described, the CCP has declared, it has this undeclared war of no bottom line against the world. And the only way for the world to counter is to do something with bottom line. So it's a war of bottom line versus no bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're in this, the side with bottom line is one entity. And so it's the totality of that, the positive force
I'm sure those people who were elected in, if they don't, they will not stand up for what they elected for. They will not be. They would not jump into this election in the first place. They take a lot of risk.
Yeah, that's true.
And so I'm sure they'll do
not
what
like
they
it's
do,
a surprise.
But they need help. But they need world help.
Yeah. Yeah, they need to be recognized for what they're trying to do and supported, for sure.
Well, I really...
We recognize as our one of ourselves, not them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good point. Good point, because there but for the grace of God goes this country. Thank you for sounding the warning call and for giving us all this great information, you guys. I hope people will go on and listen to the show and send it to your friends and your relatives. You can find it at wethepeopleradio.us. Thank you so much, and I'm sure we will speak with both of you again. Have a wonderful afternoon.
Thank you.